Ready?
Yeah. So I'll tell you about variability in PMCs and their environment from Sophie and look at potential implications for PMCs. Introduction to Sophie. I'll go through this quickly because I think everybody knows what Sophie is. Solar occultation experiment. We measure temperature, water, other gases, meteoric smoke, PMC extinction from the ultraviolet through the infrared, and we use those measurements to retrieve a variety of PMC properties, including the volume density, particle shape, the temperature of the ice, particle size, ice concentration, and most recently, the smoke content of ice particles. All these data are available online at the Sophie website, if you want to jot that down. So quick overview of where this talk will go. The question, of course, for this workshop is what can Sophie tell us regarding trends in PMCs? So Sophie has this incredibly detailed data set. There's a wealth of information. I'm going to kind of step back and take a simpler approach at looking at Sophie to see if the temperature, water vapor, and clouds can really be calibrated to understand the SBUV trends. So I'm going to look at the Sophie observations by themselves and then use this simple 0D model with Sophie temperature and water as well, and then go back to SBUV. A quick overview of 10 seasons from Sophie. On the left, you see the northern seasons, the right, the south. The top is ice water content, mesopause temperature, and then the water vapor at 005 hectopascals. So you see a great deal of variability in ice water content. What you may notice is that the water shows the least variability in these time series. Temperature has much more variability than water, and I think there are implications for that that will come out later. So what I'm going to show here a lot is I've taken the Sophie measurements and just created an average for each season. So I think this is the simplest way to look at Sophie, maybe not the best, but it's mostly what I've done for this talk. So what I show here is the temperature at 005 millibars. That is about the average PMC peak altitude, or peak pressure, I should say. And as was brought up yesterday, in the north and the south, the clouds occurred about 005. So here's a relationship telling us how temperature and ice water content vary. Very simplistically, you can start looking at correlations, fit these data, and just simply look at a sensitivity. And again, the idea here is to try to calibrate the clouds and understand the SBUV trend. So you see 16% if you take both hemispheres, 11% in the north, 17% in the south. Water vapor is not quite as easy because the PMCs interact with water vapor. And I think the really quick short story on clouds and water is that PMCs remove water vapor. You can see that in this single Sophie profile. The blue is a PMC ice water content shown as the gas phase equivalent mixing ratio. The black is the measured gas phase, and this orange dashed line is the total water, which is ice plus vapor. And it's very clear over and over, you see the water's gone when the clouds show up. So I think that's an important point when you're trying to interpret the relationship between clouds and water, is you have to remember that they do interact, and I think that can confuse the signal. So here are three ways to look at water. You can look at the cloudy sky water, which is when we have a cloud, which for Sophie is most of the time. You could attempt to sort out the few profiles where there were no clouds, and I call that the clear sky, and no relation to the troposphere. And then, of course, the total water. And here's just a snapshot of the different water vapor renditions. If you just grab the Sophie data, average all the water, it's going to look about like this, the cloudy sky. If you threw out the events that had clouds, you see that there's about a part per million more water, and then the total water is another roughly half to a part per million above that. So the question to me, and I think to any modeler, I'm not a modeler, but to modelers, is which one of these do you put in? What's the initial state? I think the answer is the clear sky water. That should represent the pre-cloud environment, and I think that's how you want to start the model. So what do you get when you try to do a PMC water correlation? This really isn't the whole story. Jim showed some more detail on this, but I'm trying to back out to the SBUV type analysis, which is a data point per season. And you can get a lot more detail with SOFI, but if you back out to that seasonal mean type approach, you do see a correlation. What I show on the left is all the water on the x-axis, ice water content on the y, again, ice water content, and then this is the clear sky. So if you look at all the water, you see the water vapor goes down. When the ice water content goes up, that's a clear dehydration signature. It's water being lost to ice. If you look at only the clear sky water vapor, you see more clear sky water vapor when you have high ice water content. So I think this is a precursor signature. But what you have to pay attention to is the relatively small change. In this, for five seasons in the south and five in the north, the total change there is about a half a part per million. And if you try to assign an ice water content water vapor relationship, the implied dependence is just tremendous. It's about 200% in IWC per part per million in water. And I think that's deceiving. I think there are a couple of reasons. I think one is the ice water interaction, but I think the other thing is, if you recall on that first plot, the SOFI shows that the water really doesn't vary a lot year to year.
What do you mean by clear sky? If it's clear sky, how is there ice?
It's a seasonal average.
It's a seasonal average. Yeah. Okay, so this 0D model's been batted around a little bit. It's really, really, really simple. You simply get the amount of ice, and this would be shown as a mixing ratio, as the difference between the gas phase and the saturation mixing ratio. I always use Murphy and Coop for that. So it's really the simplest thing you can possibly do. We've seen some examples of how well this model can do. Here's the result that was published. It's just the Northern Hemisphere of 2007, the measured ice mass density versus time and height, and then that's what you get from the 0D model. So it's amazing. It does get it in height. It gets it in time. It really captures the mass of the clouds, and that's really all it can do. These bottom plots are histograms of the ice water content in the south and the north. The black is SOFI. The red is the 0D model result, and this is the entire AIM mission. So you can see, again, that the model really does capture the essence of the SOFI observations. You will notice that the model tends to overpredict SOFI a little bit. That will be evident. So we've looked at the sensitivity of PMCs to temperature and water from SOFI, and now I want to take the 0D model and see what it says about sensitivity to temperature and water. So I ran some fairly simple cases. I simply varied the water by plus or minus a half a part per million, and then I varied the temperature by plus and minus 1 degree Kelvin. So this plot is just the northern hemispheric results. The black is SOFI. The red boxes are the nominal model case. And then these upper and lower curves are the result for plus and minus a half a part per million. And then again, for plus and minus a Kelvin. And you can analyze that to see what I call the sensitivity is. And in terms of water, the PMC IWC changes by about 32% per part per million. In terms of temperature, it's about 18% per Kelvin. So again, these are numbers we're kind of headed towards seeing if we can interpret the SBUV time series based on what SOFI and or the 0D model would tell us. So now on to SBUV. So trying to relate SOFI to SBUV, SOFI has a IWC noise floor, you could say, on the order of about a half a gram per kilometer squared. SBUV is up here about at 110 grams per kilometer squared. So there's a massive difference in sensitivity. Yeah, it looks about a factor of 1,000. Just to put that in perspective, this green line is the SBUV sensitivity threshold. So you can see when I throw out everything that SBUV can't see, I'm dealing with about 5% or less of the SOFI PMCs. but we can still do that. So what would the SOFI data say regarding the sensitivity of PMCs to temperature? That number drops to about 2% per Kelvin, compared to about 16% if you use all the PMC observations. So I think the quick summary is that these bright clouds are much less sensitive to temperature than the entire cloud population. Move on to the zero-D model. What does that tell us? Again, I've run these two cases, very water by plus and minus a half a ppm, very temperature by plus and minus one Kelvin. You can see that the sensitivity, again, this is a time series of just the northern observations, SOFI black. The blue is now the SBUV, IWC. And then the red is the model nominal case with the plus and minus water and plus and minus a Kelvin temperature. So what you see is that the sensitivity to water drops to about 11%. That's about a factor of 3 less sensitive than the entire cloud population. If you look at in terms of temperature, it drops to 4% per Kelvin, and that's about a factor of 5 less than the entire cloud population. So just some comments on what we're seeing here regarding the sensitivity of PMCs to temperature and water. These are simply the equilibrium ice growth curves. That this is what the zero-D model does, basically, is it just assigns the gas phase water to the ice phase, and that happens along these curves. The blue curve is initialized with 2 ppm. The black is initializing with 4 ppm. So with regards to temperature, you see that it's extremely sensitive, the ice is, to temperature changes when you're at the frost point. I think we all knew that. What's interesting is when you get down to cold temperatures, changing the temperature does nothing to the ice. Regarding water, at most temperatures, a part per million in gas is a part per million in ice. You double the water, you double the ice. It's a one-to-one effect. Now, so it obviously it depends where you are in this curve, so then it's useful to put that back into a data set, be it a model, or for me, it's SOFI, and run the changes. So this is what the ice water content change looks like. This is the ratio of nominal to the perturbed model. In this case, it's adding a half ppm of water, subtracting. And you can see what the change is. Out here at the very dim clouds, a half ppm could be a factor of 2. This green line is the SBUV result. You get up to the SBV clouds, and the effect is very small. It's a similar case for temperature. Huge effects out here at the dim clouds, almost no effect, or a much smaller effect when you get to the very bright clouds. Okay, so just to sum all this up, what I've shown here is the temperature sensitivity. It's just the ice water change per Kelvin. And this is from SOFI. For all clouds, it's 11% per Kelvin. And this is just for the north. And then if you restrict yourself to the SBUV type PMCs, that drops to 2% per Kelvin. If you use and for water, I don't put that in there because there's the correlations between ice and water on a seasonal basis from SOFI are statistically insignificant. So I'm not going to advertise those numbers. But you can use the model to look at that. And again, the sensitivity is huge for all the clouds in terms of temperature, much smaller at the SBV clouds, and a similar situation for water. We go from 32% per part per million to 11. So you could take these numbers from SOFI and the model, and what I've done is taken this advertised SBV trend of 2% per decade, and just very, very simple arithmetic, that would lead you to derive a trend of about a half to 1 degree Kelvin per decade cooling, which I think is roughly consistent with a lot of the results we've seen, maybe on the low end of what we've seen from the observations. So I think it's a start, it's an idea, it needs more work to be mature. But it's an attempt. I had this initial thought that I could kind of calibrate PMCs to the stratosphere where we have a ton of data and do that with SOFI. and then see if we could relate the PMCs from SBUV to this long-term stratospheric record of radiosondes around the globe. And I didn't really get to do that, but I grabbed the radiosonde station closest to my office, which was Boise, Idaho, and looked at the temperature residuals from the Boise radiosonde record at 26 millibars and compared that to the SBUV ice water content residual. And I was rather shocked to see that there's a really good correlation between the stratospheric temperatures over Boise and the SBUV ice water content. Now, I have to, it almost seems too lucky. I just did this in a hurry, and I thought, wow, that's pretty good. So I grabbed a few more stations. I tried Fairbanks, Resolute Bay, and it just doesn't work like that. So apparently Boise, Idaho is a magic indicator of the polar mesospheric cloud world. So again, trying to take SOFI down to a simpler interpretation, which is like the SBUV type data record, what we see is clear relationships between PMCs and temperature. The PMC water vapor story in this interpretation, and Jim Russell had a very different look at it, I think is not so clear. I think some of that's confused by the ice vapor interaction and the fact that the mid-season or the seasonally averaged water from SOFI is very consistent year to year, so that there really is not a signal when you look at it in the big sense. Okay, so changing gears, Gary had wanted me to put in a few slides about the most recent SOFI result, which was that the SOFI observations indicate that mesospheric ice contains meteoric smoke. So this is the figure that was recently published in JSTP. What I show here are extinction ratios. This is the infrared over the ultraviolet, and then this is the ultraviolet over the near infrared. And all these little symbols are the SOFI measurements at Zmax, which is the peak cloud height in the southern hemisphere of 09-10. I compare that to modeled curves for pure ice particles, and I look at two axial ratios here. One is the blue, four is the red, and then there are a lot of curves in there, and those are for a wide range of Gaussian size distributions. And what you see is that a model, optical model for pure ice, cannot explain 95% of the SOFI data. So that confused me for quite a while, and I finally had the idea that, well, maybe if you add smoke to the ice, because it should be the nucleus, what would you get? So the result is this bottom plot. The colored lines are model results for ice that contains various volume fractions of meteoric smoke, which are listed here. I assumed a composition of smoke of, this is known as magnesio-woustite. It's 10% magnesium and 90% iron. And lo and behold, when you model the SOFI observations in terms of this ice smoke mixture, you get very good agreement with the observations. So we're taking that as proof that mesospheric ice contains a small amount of meteoric smoke. You can go a step farther. That initial result was for magnesio-woustite. I've looked at 28 different smoke compositions, and what I found was that only a handful of these smoke compositions are capable of reproducing the SOFI observations. What I show here are a few different flavors of magnesio-woustite and carbon, and these guys are consistent with the observations. I come down here and look at a long list, olivine, pyroxene, phthalate, on. And what a lot of these particles do is they go the wrong way. So they're absolutely not consistent with the observations. So based on the SOFI data, we're able to eliminate about 70%, 80% of the smoke candidates as possibilities. So I guess what I didn't say, if you look at one of these curves, what varies along this curve is particle size. And then you get a different curve for each composition. So you can see that one of these observations corresponds to a unique particle size and a unique smoke content, which leads you to a retrieval of simultaneously determining particle size and the smoke volume fraction. So when you account for smoke in the SOFI retrievals, you get a smaller particle size than when you assume pure ice, and you also get a higher ice concentration. That's shown here in these right figures. These are probability distributions for results at Z max, again, for the southern hemisphere 0910. The black is the result for pure ice, and the red is the result you get when you assume an ice smoke mixture. So you see that the particle sizes are decreased. That change is on the order of about 25%. You see that the particle concentrations go up on the order of about 45%. The other thing we get is the smoke volume fraction. Again, I'm required to assume a smoke composition. I show results assuming magnesia-woustite and carbon. In either case, you see that the smoke content of the ice is on the order of about half a percent, with a range of about 0.03 to maybe 5% on the upper limit. So that's how much SOFI says is in the ice. And just as a quick comparison, I took the SOFI particle size distributions and I put 1 2-nanometer radius smoke particle into each ice particle and computed the smoke volume fraction. And that's shown as this red curve. That scenario, I think, representing somewhat of a smoke as the ice nucleus scenario. So you can see that this simple approximation of a nucleation scenario smoke content really underestimates what SOFI observes. And I think one interpretation of that is that the smoke must be collecting, or the ice must be collecting smoke through coagulation. There's a lot more work to be done on that. There are many more ways to look at it. And Chuck is now modeling this in WACM, as he just showed. So we're excited to compare what Chuck gets from the model to the SOFI observations. And that's it.
Thanks, Mark. Very interesting. Could you go back to slide 16, please? See, there is a benefit for numbering the slides. You have the change of ice with change of water, or even one of them, really. The question applies to either one of them. I think of, you know, this maybe as a partial, as a Taylor series. Okay, if you have a small perturbation, you can write the change in, let's say, ice water content in terms of changes in temperature and water, right? Just a sum of two, just a linear sum, if they're small changes.
Yeah.
So did you assume that the temperature is fixed in that lower right-hand column? How did you calculate that number? You have to hold it fixed, didn't you?
Here?
Right.
Yeah.
What was it? It makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, no, the temperature was fixed to the observation.
Okay.
I use the observed temperatures, and then I simply perturb water. Now, this is not really the final answer. The final answer is that number is a function of the IWC itself.
Yeah,
as I showed in the next previous plot.
I'm not so interested in the model as the method, yeah, how you did it. So you, this is really, you did it for every particular, every cloud, and then you did a grand average.
That's the grand average.
Okay.
There's much more you could do.
Right.
This is the kind of the first foray into it.
Very interesting. Okay. Gerd.
I've got a question regarding to the effect of the smoke. Is it on the infrared absorption or the UV?
The smoke does absolutely nothing to the infrared.
Okay.
So the main thing with smoke is that the imaginary index is huge. In the ultraviolet, it's on the order of 0.2 to 0.5, compared to water, which is about 10 to the minus 6. So what that says in the optics is that smoke absorbs very efficiently. So it does not scatter at all.
Yeah.
But it's a very good absorber. So that's in contrast to the ice, which doesn't absorb at all and scatters very well.
Okay.
So the only reason you can see it is through absorption.
And you said that you think this could be due to coagulation. I mean, do you have an idea if the smoke sits on the outside or is it in the inside or is it any?
You assume
a homogeneous
distribution? I don't know if you've seen your Gumbel did a simple box model of this problem. And what he got is that the smoke is continually attaching to the ice while the ice grows. So it ends up kind of like chocolate chips in a chocolate chip cookie. They're just everywhere, hopefully.
Okay. And one more. Does this result depend on if you have a cloud falling through the atmosphere, collecting all the smoke and depositing it in the lower part, then the smoke is gone in the upper part? I mean,
in theory, in Jorg's model, his ice particles will remove, I think, 90 to 100% of the smoke. Yeah. There's an interesting question there, is that what happens when the ice evaporates? And Jorg was speculating that possibly all that smoke sticks together into a kind of a super big smoke particle that would then be or falls out. It would still be maybe a 6 or 7 nanometer particle. So it may stay aloft, and it may be a very efficient ice nuclei.
No, one more question.
Possibly.
Does the smoke volume fraction vary throughout the season?
Yes.
Does it, which way?
Up and down.
So it's no trend? I mean, it's not going down?
I haven't seen a real systematic effect that's consistent year to year. In some seasons, it's kind of steadily increasing. I could have showed, I had an entire talk on that, and we had sort of paired this into one. What you see is a very strong dependence between the smoke content and the particle size. And if you had seen Jorg's presentation, he shows a very strong correlation that big ice particles collect more smoke, and small smoke is collected more effectively than big smoke. So there's a signature there related to coagulation, and that is big ice should have more smoke in it. And Sophie does show that.
Okay, I have a comment. When you first showed your results, I think some of us that work in the UV got a little bit upset about whether, whoa, does this affect the UV scattering? Because that means that the single scattering albedo is less than one, but I think Scott Bailey and I have both shown that until you get up to volume fractions up to 4 or 5%, it's negligible effect on the UV scattering. So I think the original, you know, our assumption of pure ice, at least as far as UV is concerned, is okay, and I think that's simply because the particles are so big. The ice, there's so much ice there that the UV sees. Of course, you see those much smaller particles.
Yeah.
Chuck Berdeen.
I just wanted to make a comment about the dust in the ice. And so in the KARMA model, the new one, that has the dust ice coagulation, it'll do exactly what Mark was saying, because the particle tracks the mass of dust, not how many particles of dust it's collected. So when that particle sublimates, that amount of dust is put back in as one particle, and then can participate again if it happens to get lofted up.
You put it back in as one big particle of the total
right.
mass?
Ah. So if it has an effect, we should be able to see it, and we should be able to do simulations where we turn it on or off, or don't put it back if we didn't want to do that part of it, to see if it matters much. But haven't done any of those comparisons yet. I haven't looked to see what the numbers are from the model. 1% is what?
Sorry, do you need this? So Sophie goes from about 0.05 to maybe 3%. The median here is about 0.5%.
Any more questions? Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Mark.